Welcome to Star Wars Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I'm an SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us for a talk cast every Thursday starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. Call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to Talk's website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for call ID 17702 or Starfleet Universe On Call or SFU On Call. Any of those, and you shall find this. Now, if you want the best online experience, for this lovely, lovely podcast and vidcast, or whatever you want to call it, go to twitch.tv. Yes, twitch.tv. So go to twitch.tv/SFU on call, and you'll find us there. And we'll, if you're here at 9:30 when we start this thing, well, we'll start a little bit later than that, but when we started, you'll be able to join the chat room and have a wonderful time with those people that have joined in the chat room. And I invite everyone to join. And of course, this lovely TalkCast gets to the podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. And I forgot one thing, and that if you need to contact me, well, just send me an email at sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, the Twitter account's also SFU on call. So if you want to try me there, you can try me there. And of course, and quick news from ADB this week is no news. Other than Steve had some minor surgery to get rid of some skin cancer on his head. And he's now uncomfortably recovering from that. For this week, the found on the online store, the product that I found was the SMB FNE TAC Ops Counter Pack. It has 1,120 counters. This pack contains three copies of the Sheet Tango and one copy of the Sheet Oscar, including hundreds of new ships never seen before in FNE. Now, these are the counters for the FNE Tactical Operations. Now, there's a quick mention that they do mention on it, which is the Sheet Oscar is not available separately. I'm assuming that they've had a lot of requests for that, and then also that's, I'm assuming, why they have only one copy of Oscar and three copies of Tango, which is because they have limited supply of Oscar. So just keep that in mind. Also, a reminder that last time we checked, which is a little bit ago, on Shapeways, they still have 15% discount on new and enhanced fine detail plastic materials, clear and ultra gray. So if you use that, the code FDP15, that's Franz, David, and Paul, 15 at checkout, you'll get 50% off on any purchase of $5 or more. So just a reminder, and again, a reminder, to my knowledge, there is no expiration on that deal. Now, moving on to SFB Online Tournament, which is Sapphire Star 14. Signups are now closed, and we do have a tree. It's posted up there so you can see it. I am going to be fighting my Andromedan against John Malice. I think that's how you pronounce his last name. And he's playing the Klingon. I'm playing the Andromeda, which makes things interesting because that's always an interesting fight, because the Klingon has those disruptors. I hate those disruptors. Well, sorry. I hate the UIM for the disruptors. That's what I hate about the Klingon. And the Klingon has no penalty for using the UIM. See, that's what that bugs me. But sorry, I'm gonna move on forward. I could go off on the news portion and be just sorry. Moving on forward, we have of course the library report. No updates there, and that's mainly due to me. And I should have more time next week. This past couple of weeks, I've been busy with helping organize a Eucharistic procession For those of you who are Catholic, you know what that means. Other people, it's just like a parade with the Eucharist. And it's a wonderful show of our faith. So anyway, so I've been focusing on that, so I haven't had time to do lots of things. I've been focusing so much on that. Any other thoughts on my mind aren't there. But I'll be working on, I should be have time to work on both the SFB library and the FedCom library in the very near future. And with that, that is the news for this week. Hey, this is me, the one and only Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, well, we got Jeff. Say hi, Jeff.
Good evening, everyone.
And we have Doug. Hey, Doug.
Hey, how's it going?
Going good.
I am here. How are you?
Good, good. All right. I'm just, well, come on, guys. Really? Don't mind me. I'm futzing with Twitch, and it's just driving me crazy at the moment.
Short drive. It'll be okay.
Yeah, that's true. Hit that, and that. That. My channel. Go like there. Go like that. You should be able to click on live. Bingo. Now I just got to turn down the volume so I don't have the wonderful echo. Ta-da! Okay. Now I'm set. Okay. Sorry for those just sitting there going, we just get things ready. Jeez, oh, freaking flip. So
pay no mind to the technical wizard behind the curtain.
Yeah. Or the wizard who thinks he's the technical wizard. Or the guy who thinks he's the technical wizard.
Well, I wasn't going to say that.
Hey, I know the honesty hurts, you know. But anyhow, actually, there's two topics for tonight. I want to do a really, really short topic. Because of Sapphire Star 14 tournament has just started. I'm in this one. I probably will not be in the next one because I want to make sure someone else gets the slot. But, you know, I haven't played for, this is only the second tournament I've played in the past couple years. So I figured, you know, I really should play some so I don't get too rusty. Maybe one of these times I'll actually play Jeff. Jeff, I saw your...
that might be fun.
Yeah, no, definitely. And the one thing is, I saw your opponent, Jeff.
Yeah, I did too.
I wish
looks
you
like
luck.
I'm going out in the first round again.
Yeah, yeah. Going against Peter Bakia? Yeah, yeah. Multi-rated ace, this kind of thing, you know? Me? When it comes to the player, I'm playing John Malice, who I'm not sure how good of a player he is. He's not well known to me. But it's gonna be an overall fair matchup the way I see it. It's a pretty 50-50 matchup. It is the Andromedan. That's what I decided to fly the Andromedan this time, and versus the Klingon. So, which I think is overall even. Though I think the Klingon has a slight bit advantage. The one advantage is, of course, those stinking UIM disruptors. You know, take away the UIM, and I'm willing to bet you that Klingon will be definitely not... I was going to say nerfed. I wouldn't say nerfed. I think it would be less powerful than it is. Still not quite sure why it has the UIM, but... A non-breakdown UIM. While you have things like the Andromedan has a displacement device, but it can break down.
I'm okay with that.
I can understand the weapons. Of course you're okay with that. Most people are okay with that. Everyone hates on the Andromeda. The Andromeda can...
Paul, I'm going to point out one very simple thing. Of the two pillars of the designer community that put this game together,
yep.
Both of them like flying Klingons.
Yeah, I know.
And when it's your game, you can spin it your way.
Agreed. It doesn't mean I can't grumble.
Oh, that's true. You can grumble. But I mean, I'm grumbling about who I got paired with.
Yeah, Chris, that is correct. The UAM cannot break down in tournaments. It's for the Klingons. For the Lirans, they have a one-use UIM, and after you use it the one time, it won't break down, but then it's not usable after that point in time. Which I think that's more realistic or fair to have it so that the Klingon only can use the UIM so many times. You know? But again, that's me. But okay, the one thing I wanted to bring up real quick, I don't plan on making this the main topic. This is a quick, short topic, which is the Andromedan. And currently, it's better than it was. But here's the question. Can it be tweaked to be a little bit better, but not overall too powerful? And here's my suggestion, and that is possibly turn it down to two batteries. It only has two batteries instead of three batteries, but it's got an energy module so that the energy can be drained out of, you know, from the panels into the energy module. Now here's in my mind the beauty of using it, of having it so that the Andromeda has an energy module. Two things. One, it gives the Andromeda the ability to have a target other than themselves. I know most people will just ignore it, but also there is a threat involved with leaving the energy module alone. Because the energy module can dissipate the energy that's in the panels. The Andromeda can then go, oh, thank you, transport that back into the ship, and all of a sudden they have now more energy that they can drain out of their panels. But it's, and another beauty part about you having an energy module in this case is that you can use it to tweak it. You can tweak the size of the energy module because it's a tournament. You don't have to have it so that it is a small energy module or medium or whatever. You can have it so that it has, you know, how many, you know, two or three or five panels, you know, whatever, you know, you can tweak the number of panels that the energy module has to a degree. So you can finally tune it so that it can actually be overall fair. Now, the one thing that, there's only one minor issue, of course, that would have to have one also tweak that have to happen if you did that for the batteries. And that is, I feel like the Andromeda needs more power. I'm not saying give it AWRs like the previous incarnation. I'm thinking that it needs like more like APRs. Instead of having two APRs, have four. You know, have it so that it can run around to the degree, but doesn't have to rely on the battery, but it is limited by its defense because of we tweak down the battery and we have the energy module, which only can be, it can be filled up, but it can't be drained from when it comes to the actual Andromeda ship itself. It has to transport outside the ship to let it drain the panels on the energy module. There's no way you cannot transfer the energy from those panels short of that actually being destroyed. So obviously when it comes to the client, I am giving the one minor issue for me, if that ever happened, is that I actually would have to spend the time, spend the effort to do something which I've yet to do in the client. And that is one of the things that I currently don't support is satellite ships properly. That is that if the mothership gets hit, you know, if you roll the DAC for the mothership and that mothership gets hit on the shuttle. You know, it's a shuttle hit. That then gets hit on the any of the one or more of the satellite ships that is in that hangar bay. So that doesn't it doesn't do that. It doesn't actually say, okay, what's the bring up and say, okay, which ship is going to hit, and then if it hits a certain ship, then it can at that point, allocate that on like the PA panels, or if the PA panels are down, then it does an internal to the ship, that kind of thing, which is makes things interesting. But that's one of the things that if that ever did happen, it would force me to do that. At the moment,
The thing is, I think even a small energy module would be a hard sell. I think it'd be easier to try to sell giving the Andromeda up to two transporter bomb-sized energy modules, the micro energy modules that are one panel each, and let the player choose between up to one T bomb and one or two T8 modules. That way you could have some versatility with it. The thing is that even a small module is probably not going to want to fly, simply because one, you're going to have to add the hangar bay. That's an extra internal on the ship.
It's already there.
And then you've got, it's already got a hangar bay?
It's already got a hangar bay. The crate was derived off of the Conquistador.
That's what I get for not looking at things before I open my mouth. But the thing is that the every time I've ever played a regular Starfleet Battles game with an energy module, whatever ship the energy module was on drew fire like it was the only thing on the map, and right. Whenever I popped it out to try to drain the thing, the energy module drew fire like it was the only thing on the map. And that's a viable thing. The Andromeda really doesn't have anything they can do to cause their opponent to split fire. Right. Not like the plasma races or the drone races.
Oh,
or
agreed.
The hydrants with their fighters.
But at the same time, Jeff, you just pointed out what I just said, which is that with the energy module, it becomes a target. Now,
Oh, yeah.
Which is good to a certain degree to the Andromeda, because then it's got, they're firing at something other than you. And I agree that, obviously that makes it really difficult to use. But, of course, the easier deployment to use it against would be the Romulans, or any one that are more willing to cloak. So if it's against a cloak ship, you can put it out there. And do they want to come out of their cloak? Because if they're cloaked, there's a reason why they're cloaked.
Chances are real good that if you beam the thing out while your Romulan is cloaked rebuilding their plasma, it's going to have the time it needs to get at least one turn on the map. And after 32 impulses, or is it after 32 complete impulses and the end of the turn? I can't remember how the segment on that works.
Yeah, for the engine module.
For it to start dropping power.
Yeah, I'd have to look at that myself.
But the thing is that if it would be a boon against the Romulan. And the thing is that the Andromedan are weak against plasma chuckers anyway, because they've got no ability to weasel.
That's true. But at the same time, true. The only when it comes to Andromeda against plasma chuckers, there's only two defenses. One is speed, the other one's the Dizdev. That's the only two things that you can use. In which case, obviously, you'd want to have more battery. power available if you're going to go against against plasma. But yeah, it's just one of the things that's been. I've been thinking about it, and I would love to have that option, you know, to switch it to using an energy module. Because as I said,
maybe we got to do some banging under the hood and build up and make sure the client's up to the task of handling it, and then pigeonhole a couple of people and do a couple of test contests and write up a playtest report and see what the Steves think.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. I think that's definitely a place to go. And obviously, one thing I'd have to do is, one thing I've not done yet is I have not done the research, the full research on, okay, if we did this, do the whole damage dissipation, all those, run the whole gamut, all the numbers for that.
The thing is that an energy module by itself requires a slightly different way of managing your power. You flip your panels just like you would with a bigger battery array, and the energy module is lower on the cascading chain to accept released power. But at the same time, you have to make sure that, one, you don't run yourself into a position where you've got nowhere else to put the power, and two, you keep your batteries topped up to take the power first, because again, there are mathematical limits to how much you can release in any given time, and sometimes it's more productive to radiate out to space after transferring to your batteries than flipping your panels. It's the math game behind why PA panels are so hard to really master.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And I understand that adding the energy module just adds another complexity, a level of complexity to the Andromeda. But at the same time, I'm willing to do it. That's me. Come on.
Well, the people who are committed to playing the Empire will make the effort and that's to be lauded. It's just, it's one of those things that you really need to get a couple of really good data points on. And the only way to really do that is to fly mock tournament fights with the modifications and just experiment around it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, agreed. I understand that the Andromeda, as it is, as it stands, is not the easiest ship to fly when you are constantly, I mean constantly, as in almost every single impulse of every single turn, you're thinking about either, okay, how much energy do I have left? How much energy do I have in my batteries? How much energy can I drain from my batteries so that when I get hit, my panels get hit, I can actually drain it. And if my panels are full of energy, okay, how am I going to get, I'm going to reduce the amount of power. How can I tweak it so that I can drain enough energy out of my battery so I can do a panel dump or a possible panel dump. In some case, obviously, it's not possible whatsoever because there's too much energy in the panels.
If you've got full forward panels, you can't flip your forward panels. The mathematics just aren't there. You don't have enough battery to take the excess. And I think that was partly by design when they stripped it down to three batteries, because they don't want the Andromeda to be able to turn around and do a panel dump and restore, what is it, 20? No, it's...
it'd be 24 points of energy if you want...
Yeah, 24, if you had a full... 24 points of protective power, even if it is over 180 degree arc.
Right.
No other empire can restore more than 2 points of protective power a turn. And that's one of the things that makes the Andromeda really hard to balance against, because their PA panels have a lot of nuance to them that the Galactics don't have to deal with.
Yep. I totally agree. Because the Galactics.
So what's the other topic for tonight?
Well, finish up what I was about to say, and then we'll get on to the second topic.
I mean, I have a radical suggestion.
Oh, go ahead.
I have a radical suggestion for the Andromedan.
What's the radical?
You might not want to hear this.
I'll hear it.
But why not let it have like the extra couple of batteries, but like cut the hull in half?
You mean the internal hull in half?
So when you take your internals. Yeah, when you take your internals, they mean more. They hurt more. But you have the ability to, like, not take as many internals.
You become more of an extra. Andromeda's light on hull to start with. The hull is very fragile. And the thing is that you can damage the hull without battering through the panels.
Yeah, the problem is that if you adjust the energy thing too much, and it doesn't take a lot, you can make it like close to invincible. You know, if you can dump off too much power, it's just one of those. When we've talked about the Andromeda and balancing it before, it's like it always seems like you're on that edge of, if you go like 1 millimeter to the left or 1 millimeter to the right, you completely unbalance it one way or the other. And it's just such a odd tech setup that it just, my personal opinion, they really shouldn't have had a tournament cruiser for it because of, you know, the problems they've had with it over the years. But that's just my personal opinion. So, I mean, if you play around and give it the ability to dump more power, you might want to have it take more pain from the internals, because the guy playing against you watching you dump all that extra power and get all that protective ability back, you know, he just wasted his time if, you know, he just doesn't get good hits on the handful of internals that he gets.
Okay, so you're saying the same thing for the Orion?
The Orion, people don't complain about the Orion.
Yeah, the people don't complain about the Orion.
I don't remember, because that sucker self-destructs over time. All you have to do is survive it.
Yeah, and what happens with the Andromeda, you've got the degradation so that, yeah, when you hit it, you've got permanent damage, which is really hard to repair, especially given the limited amount of energy that the Andromeda currently has.
We got another issue going, and that is the Andromeda doesn't have all the places to spend power that the Galactics do. Any of the Galactics can go speed zero in Star Castle, and the Andromedans can't. So it gets to the point where every box is precious to the Andromedan. I see what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that how many hell boxes does it have now? I think it's only four. It used to only be four boxes a hull.
No, it has more than four boxes. I have to double check.
But the thing is that anytime you're running at reinforced panels and somebody does more than, what is it?
60.
No, when you're running reinforced panels, if somebody hits you with more than, I think 48. It's 8 or 10 points of damage, mm-hmm. you end up taking, if you have to run your panels at reinforced and they do more than a certain set amount of damage, you take a hull hit. And if there's no hull left, it's a freed up internal to go elsewhere.
Yep, the leak rules.
Not to mention the fact that between that and the most popular or most populated heavy weapon in the game universe has to do 3 points of damage to a panel to degrade it, where everybody else has to do 6.
No, no,
I'm
no,
not
no, no,
entirely
no,
sure we
no,
need to.
Jeff. Yeah, there was okay. You're not, that's not quite true. 3 points. If you do 3 points of damage, that's 1 point of degradation. Period.
Right.
Because of rounding, because it's 20%. The big gotcha is disruptors.
I thought the disruptors is which I was what I was talking about. Get the sandblasting rule, allowing them to degradate more easily.
No, the disruptors get the leak rule, which is if you do more than 2 points of disruptor damage per panel. So in the case of the front, if someone hits with like 15 points of damage or anything greater than 12, there's a leak. Doesn't matter what energy
Okay.
level that the panels are at, there's a leak that goes inside. And in the case
Which mean
of
which means that the reduction of hull would be, I don't know. It's you're right. It's one of these things where you're dancing on a knife's edge trying to find the right balance.
right. In the case of regular weapons, I think it's three times the amount of the panels, and it has to go greater. The Andromeda has to be forced to be at reinforced levels for it to leak.
Yeah, that I remember.
So,
You have to
yeah.
use reinforced power, reinforced panels, and yeah, cause it, thing is that it's not difficult.
Uh-oh. Jeff is breaking up.
Effective damage envelope when saber dancing, their weapons are basically maneuver.
Agree that actually that brings up the whole issue that I have with the fight I have, which is both of us have a turn mode of B. So that always makes things interesting. The good thing about it is that I'm a warrior, I'm a war cruiser.
Give it the 9 to 15 bracket. What's that?
The good thing is I'm a war, war cruiser, which means that I can possibly go faster than the Klingon and stay ahead of them. As I said, the big issue is a turn mode. They're both the same, so it's not like I can go the same speed
Right.
as the Klingon and turn inside him. Can't do that. But anyway, okay, moving onward and forward to the next topic. Next topic. Let's do I have it up? I have it up. Okay, and let's see if that comes up. And I'm hoping it comes up. If it doesn't come up, I'm gonna have to do the manual process, and I just don't want to do that. Okay, good. Awesome. That's what I was hoping. Which is the sublight game. I got brought up last week, and I went,
Yeah,
that's
I
actually
know, I
kind of,
did it.
yeah, it's kind of interesting. And Jeff, I'm not sure if you remember, or if you were even on the show when I talked about this, which is my idea of what's called SFU ships, and which is really simplify down SFB down to its core, and have people play using that core rules. Now, I've looked over the sublight game, and this, for most part, is what I was thinking about. Now, obviously, there's certain things that I would tweak with it a little bit. The movement is exactly what I wanted, which was maximum 6 points of 6 movement per turn. And of course, it uses the same old impulse chart, but with a max speed of 6 instead of a max speed of 32. When it comes to sub light, the power to speed ratio is one third. So for one, as it says here, one unit of impulse fire is sufficient for speeds up to 3 hexes per turn, and 2 units of impulse fire is sufficient for speeds up to 4 to 6. Which I think is, you know, it's perfect. You know, you can do high energy turns. Every single ship has the same breakdown, which is 5-6, with a standard +2 modifier for the first het. This is actually interesting. I saw this on that this part just kind of went, what? Tactical maneuvers. Ships in sub-light game can make up to 3 tactical maneuvers each turn. It can turn the ship up to 3 hex sides, and each costs 1 point of impulse power. So what that tells me is that you can turn with on each. I'm hoping I'm reading this right. My understanding from what I read is that each tactical maneuver can turn the ship up to 3 hex sides. That's the way I'm reading it.
That sounds almost like a head.
Yeah. That's what. But at the same time, you're going speed 0. That is a head, for the most part.
Exactly like a head.
But am I reading it wrong? It says each can turn the ship up to 3 hex sides, which to me, when they're saying each tactical, in the previous sentence, it says the 3 tactical maneuvers each turn, and each can turn the ship. No.
If you're limited to 3 tacks per turn,
mm-hmm.
that means your tactical maneuvers could turn you a total of 3 hex sides altogether. It might be that you've got a little bit of language in there.
I will edit it out
at commander's level. Let's put it that way. Because okay. I imagine the sublight rules go back to designer's edition, and that goes way back.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It does go way back, all the way back to designer's edition. And actually, let me do this. This the one? Yeah. This is the one from the pocket edition. Let me just look and see if it mentions anything about tactical maneuvers. Nope, it does not. Movement. Yep. It doesn't mention anything about tactical maneuvers in the one from the rules that are extracted from the designer's edition. What I'll probably do is I'll probably put up the question. Okay, cool.
You might get some blue language from the powers that be, because there's reasons why they've never brought that forward in time from the breadcrumbs and designer's edition. Oh. I remember talking to Steve Cole about it on Genie back in the early 90s, and he was, even then, he was, let's let this corpse lie.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, the Starlight, the sublight game was only really popular in narrow scopes when you had people wanting to try to portray the first interstellar war with the Romulans.
Mm-hmm. Oh, understood. Which is kind of what it mentions at the beginning, which is sublight game, the first Romulan War. And say the sublight game is functionally an entire separate and different game from the rest of Starfleet battles. It represents the first Romulan War, which was fought approximately 100 years prior to the time shown in the rest of the game. The sublight game can also be used for play a scenario for the early pre-warp drive wars between the Zinnies and the Klingons. Which is interesting by itself. This set of rules is not fully developed as Starfleet battles itself. Many areas such as mines, planets, scenarios, etc. are not covered. Players should adapt the translate game to meet these needs and In time, an entire game or supplement on the subject may be produced covering this areas. And this was originally written in 1983. Sounds like almost like the X-Ships all over again. They never got back to it. But this one I cannot totally understand because I don't think there's nearly the interest in the sublight game. But yeah. I looked at it. This looks interesting to me because there are certain things that definitely are of interest. Now, combat, there's two weapons. That's it. Lasers and missiles. That's it. You got nothing else. And the laser beams are relatively simple things.
They're hit or miss.
They're hit or miss.
They always do 1 point of damage.
Yep. And a range, you have to get all the way to range one to be 1 to 5 to hit. 2 to 4, range two yep. to four, it's 1 to 4 hit. 5 to 7, it's a 50% chance at that point. 8 to 10, 1 to 2, and 11 to 15, 1. You know, it's a 1-6 chance, 1 in 6. Now, of course, for us, the ranges are weird if you look at them, because they don't go from, like, it goes from 5 to 7, not 5 to 8. We're used to everything being, modeled around speed, you know, range 8, which is overloaded range for all the heavy weapons.
Yep.
So it's, yeah, that's what is kind of interest now. And next, of course, is the atomic missile. Atomic missiles, you know, that's what the Romans didn't have plasmas back in the day. They had missiles, they had atomic missiles. And in those, you have each missile launcher has 4 missiles, and you can fire 1 missile per turn. Now, the missiles were speed 12, which is quite fast. It does double moves every single impulse because of it's the fastest thing in the whole game. Which I think is I like it. I think it's kind of interesting when you have each impulse you move 2 hexes. So, and of course you use standard seeking weapon rules. It does 4 points of damage, which if you look at it, 4 points of damage is a lot of damage. With some of these ships.
It is, particularly when you realize that most of the ships only have between 5 and 10 points of armor, and with a couple of very notable exceptions, none of them have any shields at all.
And we'll get to that part in a bit about the armor, which is I found really interesting. But anyway, okay, now it takes 1 point of damage to destroy the missile that's in flight. So basically, if you hit it with 1 laser, boom, it goes boom, and it's gone. And of course, you can fire a missile on another missile. But of course, missile racks are just like drone racks in that you can't launch from that missile launcher while you're reloading it. So now, what was it? Where is it? It was, here it is. Yeah. Each ship carries 8 reload missiles for each rack. So you have a rack and you have 8 reload missiles. So you have 8 missiles. So in other words, it's 2 full reloads. You can use warf electronic EW if you want to. The missiles are presumed to have 3 points of ECCM. Now the impulse engines are interesting in that it takes 2 hits on an impulse box to kill it, to destroy it. And while the first time it hits it, it still works at full power. But of course, as big surprise, that they added a special rule for this, which is only when 1 impulse engine box per ship can be considered half destroyed. I mean, if you hit 1...
Otherwise, you'd have somebody half destroy the entire array before starting to lose power.
Exactly. Now, the damage allocation chart, to me, is interesting because if you read it, the funny part is you don't have to destroy all the armor to get internals. Unlike Starfleet battles, you know, the proper, the damage allocation chart has armor on it, which means, well, actually, no, sorry, I read it now. Now I just realized, yeah, you have, it's just like a regular dark deck, which you have to go through all the armor to get. You have to get through all the armor first. Sorry, I misunderstood it, because it's not in bold. Bold is single hit. Non-bold is you have to destroy it to get through it. But you have to, but the damage allocation chart is interesting in this way, which is, yeah, okay, you have to go through all the armor, but then you have to go through all the hull before you actually, almost all the hull. Now, if you roll a 3 or 4, it's a single hull hit, and then it gets the shuttle and that. But you know, most of it, you have to get through all of, so. And that makes it kind of interesting. And of course, there's a lot of systems that are not available. You can do repair. Oh, and you actually power the repair. I think it's 1 point of the power can be allocated to damage control, in which case that gives you an amount of damage repair equal to what the current undestroyed damage control box, track box. So the damage repair costs are relatively simple. You got 1 point, one cost of one for a point on a shuttle or a fighter, 5 for a missile repair, a missile launcher, 6 for a battery or lab, 10 for a laser, which is interesting. 15 points to have a half destroyed impulse engine, 20 for APR or bridge, sensor or scanner, and 30 for the full impulse engine, which makes sense because you have 2 half destroyed impulse engines and you have a fully repaired impulse engine, which makes complete sense.
Yep.
And of course, as it just mentioned, big surprise, that mission launches have to repair it, then you have to go reload them. So even if you repair it, it's just like drone racks. You have to then load it up with in this case, missiles. Oh boy. I've not seen a reference to this yet for a while, which is, okay, certain ships are available in sublight game. These are organized according to race. Note the ships included in volume 2 are listed here for sake of production efficiency. Anybody remember volume 1, volume 2, and volume 3 of Starfleet Battles?
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, yes. I used to have all that.
Yeah, the Commander's Edition. That's the original copy of Starfleet Battles that I owned. That's the first copy. I didn't get it while I was still, I did not get the designer's edition. I mean, back in the day, that is. I have a copy now in ebook form, but that's it. And you know, it goes through the different ships and shows them, which is. Yeah, it shows how to create them is what it does. Like in the case of early D6, an early version of the D6 was available. Eliminate the system listed in Q4.1. Add 4 APR. Change phasers to lasers. Change disruptor atomic missiles. Turn mode of 2. The early D6 can operate at shield at minimum level. So, Q 4.1, which is remove all the ones that are not there, like all warp engines. Remove those. So yeah, you know, I was looking at let me bring up actually da-da-da-da. I wanna bring up just a couple. First time I actually brought that up, which is the sublight freighter. As a 360 laser. Not bad. Let's bring up the Klingon D6. The Klingon D6, just like the Federation CA, has a minimum shields. So it's one of the few ships that has shields on them.
Yep.
How much power
does reasons why
six
the Saucer and Booms Federation design is what it is because it was the first design they had available to them that could be shielded, which gave them an enhanced survivability in that era.
Mm-hmm.
Klingons were rapid to jump on that bandwagon too.
Mm-hmm. But of course, I'm looking at the Klingon Sublight D6 battlecruiser. Yeah, it has shields. But also the one thing it does not have armor.
Nope.
It has a total of 7 points of power. So now, one thing I do not know, because it's not mentioned, but my assumption is not, which is it doesn't mention whether the lasers are treated as phasers when it comes to having a capacitor. I didn't see anything about the lasers that says it has a capacitor.
From what I'm to remember is there is no capacitor for the laser. They have to be allocated on the EA or powered with reserve or battery power.
Right, which makes things quite interesting.
It changes the dynamic.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Because, remember, also the shields have to be powered. They have the 1 point of power, and this has 7 points of power, and then has 3 batteries. So it's got a maximum amount of power it has available is 10, which actually is quite a bit of energy if you think about it. But it has 7 lasers. So there's almost next to...
So it can move, if it wants to shoot everything, if it wants to do an alpha volley, it pretty much can't have moved.
Yep. And this is something that I am positive that and Andy Palmer would love, where, you know, the whole idea of you can either move or chew gum. You can't do both. I'm looking at the Zinni. The Zinni has 4. That's weird. The batteries have designators, all 1 designators. So you've got a total of what? Is that just 4? I'm looking for anything else. Yeah, it's only 4 power, and then it has 5 batteries. But it has also 10 armor. So definitely, for me, it makes it interesting against the Klingon that has shields. It also has missiles. It makes surprise that the Zinni only has 4. Actually, wow. I was looking at. Okay, it has 2. Wow. Okay, the question is, how do I know the difference? Because I'm seeing something here with I don't quite understand, which is we have a weapons chart for a small laser and a regular laser. I'm not sure what the designation for a small laser is.
Probably has to do with the laser mounted on shuttles.
Ah, yeah, yeah, yes, you got a good point there. I totally forgot about that. Okay, let me look at those. And one turn has 1 laser each. Da, 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 da. The laser is limited to a range of 5 hexes. Yeah.
So that'd be your small laser.
Yep. But of course, the funny thing is about the small laser also has the worst to hit. So,
Yep.
but the thing is, it doesn't explicitly in the rules state that it's a small laser. But I'm willing to bet that you are correct that it is a small laser.
And we're seeing yet another reason why the thing wasn't brought forward into future editions. Little discrepancies here and there.
Yeah, well,
Well, the other side is it's a totally different game.
right, exactly. And
True.
which was pointed out at the top of the rules, which is saying basically this is a totally different game from Starfleet Battles. You know, it's got some of the rules that Starfleet Battles has, but it's not the same. And it's mainly designed to simulate or pre-warp the pre-warp era is what it's designed for. So it's even before the Y module. It's pre that. You know? And that's actually one thing I'd have to look at, which is the early years, because I know the early years, a lot of them have warp, but it's that kind of middle stage where there are some ships that have no warp and just have impulse, like obviously the Romulan Warbird.
And the sublight snipe and a few others.
Right. Exactly. Now, then yet the one difficulty is the I'm not sure about the years because of in a way you wouldn't want the Warbird to no I'd have to double check this but I'm pretty if I recall correctly the Warbird basically is has like 6 impulse or something like that but it also has a plasma torpedo, which makes things interesting. If you try to translate atomic, a speed 6 movement charge to with plasma, because plasma is supposed to move speed 32 versus speed 6, and even that speed 6, yeah, it's
Well,
pre-warp.
the scales are not necessarily
Yeah.
aligned in the way we think of. I'd
Exactly.
have to look at the rules myself, but they pro but the plasma, if it's available, would probably move similar to the high-speed drones, if not three hexes of an impulse rather than two.
Yeah, that's true. That's one thing I'd have to look at. I'd have to look at to see if how if the, if the if there is that translation year in the early years module, which also has the atomic missiles or not, where basically you have that transitory period and have it so that you have the Rosetta Stone, basically, which allows you to translate between the two.
It's an interesting thing to think about.
Yep. And as I said,
Starting to remember the old tech tree thing. That's what it's reminding me of.
The tech tree
Remember developing that
is
years
a
ago? It was part of a campaign setup thing.
right.
oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Oh. Oh. Campaign designers. Yeah. Campaign designers module. Book. I remember that one. Because that's when actually the whole idea is that you actually had a tech tree that you could go down. The whole idea is start with stub light in the campaign and go forward and improving the technology and so forth, you know, as part of the campaign.
That might be kind of fun.
Oh, agreed. If you got a good number of individuals that are really into Starfleet battles and want to do something to that degree, you know, that'd be really cool. Because as it is, I don't know of any games that actually do a tech tree for a tactical board game. Well, a strategic board game, even that.
There was one that I could think of. I just can't remember the name of it. It was an old Steve Jackson game, one of the little pocketbook games, where you built your ships and you built your tech level as you went.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't remember that. I have like a mental picture of it, but I can't think of it right now.
Okay.
And that's what that kind of reminds me of when mm-hmm. we were talking about like the tech tree, not the tech tree, but just the game in general. I was thinking of that, that there was right. some way. Well, yeah, that Steve Jackson did it. And the tech level of the, of your empire, faction, whatever, affected the abilities of your build, like, you know, versus the other guy in combat as well. And it's interesting. I just can't think of the name of it.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. That's perfectly fine. The only pocket game that I can remember from way, way, way ago, and actually I think I got electronic version of the game, which is Warp War, where it was
that might have been
it was a game
that's it, I think,
where you had systems, ship systems, and you can carry around the ships, and it was one of the only it touted itself as a game that didn't require die rolling. You didn't roll the dice to see if a weapon hit or not. It just either hit or didn't hit. Simple.
Okay. It may have been. It's from that era, though.
Oh yeah.
It may even have been that one, if you have it to look at. That's something that if I have it, I think it's in storage.
Mm-hmm.
If it made it through that last move, so. But yeah, very specifically, not where the kids can get to it right now at their age.
I'll look at it later. Currently, I don't have access to some screen. An unforeseen reason, but I think it's a little late to bring it up now. Maybe I'll bring it up tomorrow. Maybe. But anyway. Yeah, so I think... I would love to do like an online version of this game, because that was the whole idea of SFU Ships, which was basically a simplified version of SFB, or at least something that boils it down to the basics of what it meant to be SFB. Now, of course, the one thing that of course the satellite game has that might kind of interfere with that idea is that it just has two weapons, has lasers, and has atomic missiles. And the lasers are 1 point of damage. It's either it hits or it doesn't hit. You know? Unlike the phasers, which part of that whole phaser chart is, of course, depending upon the die roll, you do more damage or less damage. You know? Was that Jeff?
Yeah.
So that makes it kind of a little less SFB-ish, but I'm not sure. You know, it'd be interesting. I'd be interested in playing at least.
Let's take a look at it. Start with this. Isn't there a cadet module half that lets you use?
Yeah, there is a cadet module. Which Andy Palmer loves the cadet module because of the simplified ships. That's one thing. That's one of the things he really loved about the cadet training module.
Well, I was thinking that if you started with that rule set, you might find it doesn't require near as much modification as Federation Commander or SFBU.
That's weird. Okay. That's true. And the Cadet Training Manual also has a robot player, which I've yet to implement because I'm actually as part of SFB Online, I do have a cadet room, which has the scenarios set up for you. So you can say, okay, this ship, this ship, this ship. It allows you to play that and move the counters yourself. It doesn't the there's no automation for that stuff yet, but that's one thing that I was thinking about adding, which is an automation for at the very least, moving the drones, because of that's one of the scenarios where basically it's drone practice. Well, actually one of them is the first one, if I recall correctly, is basically you put out a bunch of drones and they don't move. You just fly around and knock them out of the sky. Yeah, I'd have to look at that more right now. I'm just trying to go through my copy real quick, and I'm not seeing it at the moment, but I'm doing it kind of rushed to look for it, so that makes.
Well, like I said, the if you started with a more simplified rule set, it might give you a better foundation for stripping even more things away to get you to where the sublight game would be. Changing out impulse charts shouldn't be that difficult.
No,
The
no.
weapons wouldn't be that difficult. Any of the individual pieces themselves wouldn't be hard. And as I recall, there's not much in the cadet module rules that isn't in the sublight rules to one degree or another.
Going to just bring a single player mode at the moment. Like that. Create a game. Cadet. Okay, scenario. Let's go with battle drill. And that's where you have battle drill was the first one where you have all the drones all pre-set up and you're flying your one ship, and there's your Federation Cadet Cruiser. Da -da -da -da. And then you can fly and practice moving, and also of course practice just using the client. I want to do is exit the game because. Well, come on. Okay, there's something. I think I might have broke something. It's one more time. There it is. Oh, okay, it's under attack. This is the one. Yeah, that is it. There's a minor bug. You can see Constellation, which is Federation, and you can change it so that you actually can use a different cadet one, and you can do the Coda incident. That was a limit. Then you have the freighter, and you have the Constellation, and then you have the three Klingons. One, two, you can play that scenario, but won't, it's in there. So there's one of the Chris Newsy was saying, oh, they're in the clients. I guess they're in the clients. So they're just in there. They're in there. They have a whole different room called the SAB Cadet. And that's for training. So you can go through the idea is I put in the scenarios themselves so that you actually can learn, go through the cadet training manual. I said the only thing that it doesn't have, which is the robot player, and doesn't automate the moving of the drones. So but I think it might be a good thing. But anyhow, I think we should wrap up with that. Big surprise, it's getting late. And of course, I have to get up bright and early tomorrow morning.
Hey, Paul,
Yes.
did I get to mention last week before I dropped that we found a place for gamers this summer?
I no, not on the podcast, no.
Oh, okay.
When we
Well, hey, just
last
for
talked, you
everybody else
did.
listening, we found a place for gamers this summer. It'll be Labor Day weekend, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. And pre-registration is open. We don't have a lot of events listed, but if you guys want to run a tournament or something, that would be awesome.
Yep.
And also, if you want to like send me a schedule in Facebook Messenger there, that would be fine too.
Okay, we'll do. We'll do.
So there's that.
Okay, cool. We'll see progress in the future about who's coming, what's coming, and hopefully we'll see more people this time. Always good to grow if it's always good to grow. Let's end it there.
And if you want to, maybe schedule a future podcast, not necessarily next week, but sometime in the near future towards, special event to run. Talk about things to do. Good thought.
Yep, I think it's a great idea. I also have to. I want to contact the F&E people, which I still got to do, about getting someone on to talk about F&E for one or at least one of the podcasts. Maybe drum up some business for StratCon. If there's anyone who listen to the podcast and isn't already on the discussion board.
We'll be at the Red Lion Hotel in the Lancaster Room
Okay.
on Eisenhower Boulevard, just off of Harrisburg.
Okay.
But it's listed on the
On the
Facebook group
website.
and all that happy stuff too.
Cool. Well, then, Doug, you have a good night.
Thank you.
Jeff, you take care out there. Drive safely. Stay on the road.
Yeah, keep the dirty side down and between the lines.
Yep, that's a good thing. It's a good thing. You take care. So, I'll run through on the SFB sublight game, which definitely has some quirkiness compared to the SFB, and I think it. I like to play at least a few games of it. Maybe just paper and pen, sit down, print out a couple copies, and just run through it just to see how it looks. How does it play? I think the Klingon versus the Zinni setup, that fight would be the most interesting to me just because of you got a Klingon which has more power, more weapons overall, and it has shields versus the Zinni, which has armor versus the Klingon who doesn't have armor, and you have more missiles. And you have actually, believe it or not, you have quite a few lasers. But it doesn't have the power to fire the lasers. It's from the looks of it, the Zinni is like one giant battery. You have to charge up the battery, and then you get ready for your attack run, and that's when you use your batteries on your attack run. And then you run away, and you recharge your batteries, and then come back again. So a battle against those two would be quite interesting. So, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.